Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Rock and roll, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. And as I speak, it is 8:11 p.m. on Sunday, October the 3rd, 2004. 1 month or so away. It is 1 month. What is it, honey? November 2nd, right, is Election Day. So we're less than a month away from Election Day. And a lot of stuff is going out. I'm going to digress just for a moment here because I don't often talk about sports, but I just want to say a brief congratulations to the Atlanta Braves on clinching their 13th straight division title, which they did yesterday. And, you know, they had already won the division, but they had a chance to knock out the Chicago Cubs from the playoffs, which they did, and I'm glad they did because, you know, earlier in the year, actually, my wife and I went to a ball game. We don't often get to go to ball games. But actually, this time I had some serious extra money, so I even laid out serious money for good seats. I laid out $30 a ticket for two really good seats, and it turned out to be a 15-inning game. So I told my wife, "Hey, you know, $2 per person per seat per inning, and that's not too bad, you know." And the Cubs won that game. We were actually winning that game 1-0. Was it 1-0 or 2-1? We were one run ahead, two outs in the ninth. Smoltz was pitching, John Smoltz, the ace reliever. And we figured we had the game in the bank because it was two quick outs. And then first pitch on this guy hits a homer. And we go extra innings. And we go to the 15th inning, and the Cubs finally pull it out. And there were a lot of Cubs fans there. And they weren't really mean. You know, I mean, the Cubs are hardcore fans, but they're not nasty fans like Phillies fans or Yankees fans or even Mets fans, because New York fans can be pretty rude and stuff. But these were Chicago fans, and they were getting, you know, they were cheering loudly. And I usually just shut them up by yelling, 1908. And for those of you who don't understand, 1908 was the last year that the Cubs won a World Series. We're going on 100 years, folks. Think about that. A century without a World Championship. Isn't that remarkable? We have fought two world wars, and the Cubs have not won a championship. That shows you something right there. I mean, that's an even worse record than the Red Sox, who haven't won since 1918. But the difference is the Red Sox have at least been in the World Series. There's a great baseball song called Dying Cub Fans' Last Request. And I think I'll stick that in there this show, just for shits and grins. In honor of the Cubs blowing another one, because they really choked down the end of the season. They had a chance to at least get into the wild card spot, but they blew it. But there's a line in that song that says, the law of averages says that anything that will happen that can. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. It was 1945 was the last year that the Cubs won a pennant and actually appeared in the World Series. And last year we saw the curse at work. This year I think we saw the curse at work before they even got to the playoffs. So, but congratulations to the Braves. Cubs, maybe next year. We know you've got a decent team built up. And speaking of teams that are winning, like the Braves are, the Falcons today won their fourth game. They're 4-0, doing very well this year, much better than a lot of people anticipated, although we knew it was going to be a different season with a new coach and a healthy quarterback because we lost Michael Vick last week. So for those of you who aren't into sports, I'm sorry for going off on a tangent like that, but I am a man of many interests, and I do a lot of things, and I listen to a lot of things, and I can converse on a lot of different subjects, which I am wont to do. And I can talk about anime, and it was, in fact, an anime convention in town last week. Some old friends of mine, Anime Week in Atlanta was last week, and I was there, and, you know, I saw some of my old friends, and met some new people, and generally had a pretty good time. I actually had a better time this year than I had last year. My wife had a good time, except she wasn't able to see as much as she would have liked. She wanted to see the costume contest, which was a big event. If you've ever been to a science fiction or an animation convention or anything like that, you know that the real big event is the costume contest, where people get up there and show their costumes. And I only saw a few minutes of it myself because there was a party going on. And I wanted to go to that, but I dropped in real quick to see some of the costumes, which were pretty good. The killer ones were these three guys that got dressed up as a Tetris. Is that the name, honey? Tetris? Tetris blocks. You know those games where the little different shapes come down and you got to turn them around so they fit into slots? It was really cool. These three people got up as three different Tetris slots, and they showed up on stage and they did a couple of maneuvers, and it was really kind of neat. So I had a good time in that. But anyway, let me talk about what I wanted to talk about. I had a short work week this last week. I was off Monday and Tuesday because I had, an esophageal duodenalectomy or something like that. And basically, what they did was they stuck this tube down my throat. They knocked me out. They stuck this tube down my throat to look for polyps. Actually, not my throat, my esophagus. It's a digestive thing. It's not a breathing thing. And that's why I didn't have a show on Thursday, because they did this Monday, and I was still kind of out of it on Tuesday, and my throat hurt for the next couple of days or so. The doctor said he saw a couple of polyps, but he didn't think it was anything serious. I'll know more next week, because I have another short week next week when Thursday and Friday I go to the same doctor for another procedure. And I don't want to gross you out, so I won't say anything about what the procedure is. Let's just say that they're getting me on both ends. I probably will still have a show on Sunday because the procedure is going to be done on Friday. And, you know, although I sometimes do talk out my ass, it doesn't really make a difference in this case. My wife is trying to hold back laughter on that one. She laughs at anything. She thinks anything I say is funny. But at any rate, let me explain the situation where I work. For those of you who haven't listened to my show, who are first-time listeners to my show, who don't know anything about me, I actually do work a 40-hour job for a living, if you can call it that. If you can call it a living, I'm always broke. And I work in a steel manufacturing plant. I work on an assembly line where we put together circuit boxes, electrical circuit boxes. And I am in a union. I'm in the IBEW, like it says on the blog, cupojoe.blogspot.com. And we just had a contract negotiation recently, and one of the clauses in the contract, one of the things in the contract, is very clear that says the company can only hire temporary workers for no more than 30 days. Now, in the busy season like it is now, and even more so because of the Florida hurricanes, because we build mostly for construction purposes, you understand, that's the bulk of our business. And during the busy season, we hire a lot of temp people. That's how I originally got hired. In fact, I think 90%, 90 to 100% of the people who work there, somewhere in there, not 100%, but a high number, came there through the temp agency, which in this case is Randstad. It's the only temp agency that they use. It's probably if it wasn't for Siemens, which is the company I work for, that particular branch of Randstad wouldn't be in business because we're pretty much the bulk of it. But I work on an assembly line there, and there's a lot of temps that work there. And usually the pattern is they hire a bunch of temps, and they wind up keeping in about half of them, depending on what their needs are, depending on who's retiring. We have people in that shop that have worked there 30, 40 years. There were a couple of people there who have worked there since before I was born. I'm 42 years old, ladies and gentlemen. I have trouble imagining that some people have been working in that place all my entire adult life. That is just sick. That is just sick. And I feel like I'm the old, I feel like I'm an old guy, you know. At any rate, the 30 days for a lot of the temps, and a lot of the temps that are working on my particular line where I am, their 30 days was up on Thursday. And they got all called into a meeting on Thursday and basically told that they were going to be let go in 2 weeks. And, of course, a lot of them were not happy. And it really just goes to show you how bad things are, that people are really desperate to have even the crappy job that I have. Because let's face it, even though it does pay fairly well, I make $13 an hour, even though it does pay fairly well, it is a pretty crappy job. I mean, I sit there and I drill in 4 screws into a box all day, 8 hours a day, well, 7.5 hours a day. And that's all I do. And it can get boring, and I work with a lot of people who like to gossip. A lot of old women who just gossip, and they have nothing better to do all day than to tell stories about each other. And it's been very difficult for me trying to fit in, to be perfectly honest, if I can be blunt. It's been very difficult for me trying to fit in. So, but people want to get that job. I mean, people want steady work this day and age. And it is pretty steady work with very good health care benefits. As I mentioned before, I was getting these things taken care of. There's no way I could have been able to get this stuff taken care of if I didn't have a health care plan, period. So that's pretty good right there. And there's other things they're helping me out with. But a lot of people are desperate to have that kind of work. And so a lot of the attempts were very disappointed. But I'm upset because they're firing them after 2 weeks. And I'm saying that's not according to the contract. That is a breach of the contract. What the hell was that? That is a breach of the contract. And they're not supposed to be doing that. So I don't know what the union's going to do about it, if they do anything about it. And that's the problem. We do have a fairly ineffectual union. And, you know, every union meeting I go to, the theme of the meeting is be thankful you have a job. Now, these are not the unions that I remember my dad growing up at. When my dad was in the union, in the New York City union 30 years ago, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all. You know, it was like, whose head do we bust this week? Hey, I got this freaking guy over here. He's giving me trouble. All right, we'll bust his head. That's a fucking union. That's a union. But not this union. This union is, be lucky you have a job. You're lucky you're working. So we'll see what they do about that. Realistically, they should hire these people because they're doing a good job, actually, and they're working very hard. And not everybody who comes into the place just up and stops working after they get hired on full time. Only guys like me. And actually, a lot of the veterans, they know the place well enough to know when they work hard and when they don't need to work hard, and what the company cares about and what the company doesn't care about. And I've brought it up before. I've come to the impression that where I work is just nothing but a big tax break. I mean, Siemens, if any of you are familiar with Siemens, spelled S-I-E-M-E-N-S, Siemens is a huge, huge multinational corporation with plants all over the world. They have hundreds of plants across America. They've got 5 or 6 here in Atlanta alone. And they do a lot of high-tech work, and we basically work in the armpit of Siemens. Honey, don't do that. Lay down. I'll put those clothes away. Lay down. Sit down. No, my wife is insisting. My wife is sick, ladies and gentlemen. She has trouble walking. She has trouble standing up, so I'm kind of filling in. And she's, even though I did the laundry, she's insisting on putting the clothes away. And I can't stop her from doing that. And, my wife is not covered by my health care plan, so she gets taken care of through Grady Memorial Hospital. Anyway, what was I saying? Siemens. It's a big company. And if you look at my plant, And I want to make it clear that I don't think there's anything wrong with this. My plan is something like 90 to 95% minorities. A lot of black people, a few Hispanics here and there, but mostly black people and mostly women. And, you know, while I don't have a problem with you know, hiring minorities and anything like that, my feeling is that the only reason why there are so many is because it makes Siemens look good. They're probably doing it to balance out the other stuff they have in other places. And therefore, that would also explain why the productivity is the way it is. Not because there's black people working there, but because the company doesn't care. I'll tell you, there's a lot of intelligent people that work there. A lot of hardworking people who do a good job and who want the company to make a profit so they can continue to have a job. I mean, I don't know anybody there who's lazy. In fact, they don't like lazy people where I work. The older veterans, the people who have been there for a while, are smart workers. They're not lazy. They're smart workers. They understand what needs to be done and how hard, you know, how much things need to be done. So, but they are so incompetent in a lot of the things that they do. Not the people who work, but the upper management, the way things are organized, that the only possible explanation is that the only reason the plant exists in the first place is to keep a lot of minorities employed to make the company look good. I don't particularly have a problem with that. And what's really nice about a lot of my coworkers is that we can discuss the issue of race very, very honestly, which is what I like to do. I realize that being a white man, that it's very difficult for me to talk about race because anything you say along those lines tends to be tends to make it sound like you're a racist when you're not. You just want to have an open and honest discussion about the issues of race in this country and how things are. And even a lot of the people I work with say, yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot more than really maybe there should be. And I'm not saying they should hire more white people. You know, screw that. Quite frankly, I get along with the black people more than I get along with the white people. Because a lot of the white people, they're friggin' Bush supporters, you know, and I don't care for them very much. We got one guy in the shop who's like this kind of quasi-libertarian type of person, and he keeps talking about, oh, if Kerry gets in, he's going to raise our taxes. And I just want to go up to him and say, hello, McFly, wake up. Anyway, we'll see what happens at the shop. We'll see if they keep the temps in. I honestly hope they do, and they've got two more weeks. Let's see if the union steps up and actually does something for a change. We'll just see. In the meantime, we're going to go take a little break, and we're going to hear from our friends at BuzzFlash.com and a couple of little things throughout the show. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Like Bush, House Majority Leader Tom DeLay claims to be on a mission from God. And like a Texas rattlesnake, he slithers across the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, pushing a GOP biblical worldview upon the United States and pounding colleagues and opponents into voting against their constituents' better interests. The hammer, as some call DeLay, uses unethical and bullying tactics more indicative of the Antichrist than an angel of God. Fortunately for us, those tactics have him facing possible legal indictments and House ethics investigations. Ending Tom DeLay's reign in Congress is important for all voters, because many Republican Congress folk who claim to be moderates shrink under DeLay's pressure and vote for his Paleolithic legislative agenda. And if a politician doesn't do what Tom DeLay says, they get their political kneecaps blown off by this zonked-out Republican rapture mob enforcer and his Tim LaHaye left-behind extra-religious cohorts. DeLay's a hitman for corrupt Republicans who fashion themselves fundamentalists, but have more in common with the mob than with the clergy. Tom DeLay is an uber hypocrite because he works hard to ensure a reign of evil will fall over the U.S. for years to come. But, like Bush, he does this by using God's name in vain. It's the old bait and switch. You know, the stern, sanctimonious minister who embezzles from the church funds and runs off with the choir master's wife. You know, calling Tom DeLay a radical would be an understatement. A former exterminator, he once said that dioxin was good for you. Calling him a hypocrite requires no statement. Tom DeLay is the pure embodiment of it. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
As the politics change, his positions change. And that's not how a commander-in-chief acts. Let me finish. The intelligence I looked at was the same intelligence my opponent looked at.
And welcome back to the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I always encourage you to write in the comments section on the blog or to email me if you've got something you want to talk to me about and whatnot. I am going to be – what's the guy's name? I am going to be on the News Maverick radio show next Sunday. Thomas Reynolds is the host on that, and he calls himself – this guy is interesting. He calls himself a progressive liberal who is voting for the libertarian candidate. And he emailed me and asked me to be on the show, and, you know, I listened in a little bit, and I read it a little bit on the side, and it's newsmaverick.us, newsmaverick.us, if you want to check that out. And it's very, very interesting. And I'm going to be on the show next week, and we'll see what he has to say. What was I going to do? Where was I? Well, you heard that little sound clip there during the musical interlude, and that was George W. Bush during the debate, which was the big news event of the last week. That happened on Thursday, and I didn't see the event live. I saw it later on, and Bush was doing a lot of head bobbing and eye rolling, and from all consensus is that he looked like a really big fucking idiot. Is the overall consensus, except, of course, for the pundits who are desperately trying to keep this guy afloat. There was a news report, I think Atrios had it. One of the guys from Fox News said how everybody, all the press corps, the press corpse, as Hullabaloo Digby calls it, and he said they were deathly silent during the debate as if their entire life was on the line. And in a certain sense, it is, because you know, they've been propping this son of a bitch up from the very beginning, just letting him get away with literally murder in the case of the Iraq war. And that is, you know, when you don't have a case to go to war, just because it's more organized murder, it doesn't make it any less murder, because we've just basically killed a lot of innocent Iraqis. I mean, even after we took the country over, what happened at Abu Ghraib, several people were killed in there due to our torturing. It's just murder is what it is. And these guys have been propping him up. I was having an exchange with Mr. Reynolds concerning that over the email. And, you know, and I basically said that I blame the press more for what's going on than I blame the Republican politicians. I mean, you expect politicians to act in a certain manner, and basically they're doing what they can get away with, and the media are the ones who allow them to get away with it, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. Bill Clinton pointed that out one time. Said they're just doing it because they get away with it, because their supporters are certainly going to let them get away with it, and the press isn't going to really report the truth. They're just reporting at best. They're doing gossip. But if you notice during that clip, and this is something interesting that I want to bring up, and I can't confirm or deny this. Hullabaloo has a picture as well as talking about it. If you go on his site, that's Digby's blog. Well, just go on the damn on my blog and click on the link from there. It's easy enough. Hullabaloo is the name of the site. It's digbysblog.blogspot.com. And it is something that had been talked about in other places. He had a picture and I have the audio there. And you notice the area that the volume went up a little bit where he was saying, let me finish. Bush was saying, let me finish. It was interesting that he said that at that time because nobody was interrupting him. His little warning light wasn't flashing, meaning that he had run out of time. He just kind of threw that out. And some people have had the theory that Mr. Bush had a little earpiece that he was getting signals from. And this is an old trick. This is an old televangelist trick. Peter Poppett, I think his name was, a televangelist down in Florida, I think. And basically what he was doing is he was making it sound like he was doing some big miracle by pointing out people in the audience who had specific problems. But what nobody knew, at least nobody who thought to think, who thought to investigate a little bit further, knew was that he had a little earpiece in his ear, and his wife was reading the prayer cards that everybody fills out when they go to these things to know what they're praying for, and she was just saying, okay, this guy in the third row, because they know where they're sitting. See, they place them and they know where they're sitting. And so he's able to go to them and say, oh, you're praying for this, you're praying for that, or, you know, you've got this disability, I can heal you. And what it really was that his wife was reading the cards and sending over a microphone to his earpiece. And it was James Randi, the famous skeptic, the former stage musician, who is basically calling these people on all of their little tricks because he knows all the tricks and he knows what they're doing. And he even got a recording of her because they found the frequency that she was doing it. So somebody somewhere is going to find that frequency if they're doing this. The frequency is there. And if you have enough people scanning a bunch of frequencies, then you can pick it up. If you just scan for stuff, you can pick it up, no matter how low the signal is. And what the picture is on Hullabaloo is that you can see on Bush's back, there's a little T-shaped indentation, which looks like a wire going down his back. And it was interesting that one of the rules of the debate that was that none of the characters can be shot. None of the characters. Well, they are characters to a certain extent. But none of the candidates could be shot from the back. I don't mean shot with a bullet. I mean shot with a camera. And that might be a reason why. You know, you never know with these people. And like I said, it is an old evangelist trick, and I would not put it past them to do that. And it could be the point, if Bush looked irritated, he might have been irritated because there were people telling him what he should be saying or what he should be doing. And he's just a little child, is really all he is. You know, and it is so obvious that this is all he is and all he's capable of. That he's just like a little kid, and he needs to be told what to do, and he needs to be told what mark to stand on. He needs to have words put into his mouth because he's, quite frankly, not capable of forming a coherent thought on his own. He's been given everything he ever wanted in his life, and it's all been set up by family name and by other people who want to use him for their own ends, and, of course, their own ends are his own ends as well because he benefits from it. And he's just a little child. I don't know if the earpiece thing is true or not. It would certainly explain a couple of things. It would explain why he said, let me finish, in the middle of a sentence when nobody was interrupting him. Because if somebody was pestering him in his ear to say that. So I'm going to put it out there to all you Democrats out there. The ones who are able and capable of getting close enough, you got to be able to scan the frequencies. You got to be able to figure out if they're actually doing this, and if they are, and you can get that on audio, that'll be a killer right there. I mean, nobody's going to be able to spin that. There's no friggin' way anybody's going to be able to spin that. They'll try. They're already spinning it on the pundits. You know, why do people listen to these people? Why does anybody follow what they say? You know, Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, he had it pegged just right. He said, you know, watch the debates, watch it on C-SPAN or watch it on someplace that doesn't have a pundit, and then decide for yourself. What a novel idea. Listen for yourself and decide for yourself. Isn't that remarkable, honey? Is that a remarkable thing that you not listen to what other people tell you, what to believe? Isn't that a remarkable thing? So, I'm sorry, what'd you say? For those who have time, she says. Well, I agree. It's very difficult. And this is why I say that the press is more to blame than anybody else for what's going on. Because with the politicians and with corrupt people who want their way in every shape imaginable, in every form imaginable, and who believe they're absolutely and totally right in every way, on every issue, they're just doing what they're doing. But the press has to be the arbiter. They have to be the ones to lay down the truth. And they're simply not doing that. And that is the issue. And they're the ones who can keep people informed. But, of course, you know, these other people, they have their own little media. I was talking about the Peter Poppett thing. And the truth of the matter is that the people who regularly listen to his show would never know that he was doing that. And a lot of them never found out. Or it took 6 months or so for it to filter down to them, because they are told constantly by the preachers and by whoever not to watch or listen to anything else. Because James Randi made his discovery known on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, which was, you know, a huge rated show. I mean, you're not talking about, you know, local cable access channel, you know, 56 with two guys in their underwear sitting in a couple of chairs talking about the football scores last week. No. This was on the fucking Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And Carson was a stage musician, too. A lot of you young kids don't even know who Johnny Carson is, and that's kind of scary in my own eyes. But Carson was the guy who ran The Tonight Show for 20-something years, one of the most popular shows in television for a long time. And, you know, so because he's a stage musician, he would occasionally have James Randi on to talk about this stuff. And Randi, you know, showed this. And he showed clips of the guy speaking, and he played the audio of the guy's wife talking in his ear. And that's what we got to get, man. We got to find out what frequency they're playing that ass on. If they're doing that. I'm not saying they are or they aren't. But if they are, we got to have somebody there with a radio scanner trying to figure out what frequency they're using. Maybe we can get a mole inside there somewhere who knows what's going on. But we got to fucking get that. That would be the coolest fucking thing in the world. That would really make members of the Republican cult think twice. It'd be something they could really blow in their face. You know, they had that whole thing with CBS a couple of weeks ago about the Killian documents, where the right-wing bloggers, you know, make some minor kind of points about the documents that CBS had. And there was never any consensus that the documents were forged. And that's just the thing. Even after all of that, there was still nobody saying outright that the documents were forged. At least no expert was saying that. CBS, all they admitted to was that maybe they didn't vet the information as much as they should have. And then Fox News, and they did issue an apology and a retraction, but they put on their website quotes from Kerry that were never there. Something along the lines of Kerry said, "Women will like me because, you know, I know how to give a good manicure," or some bullshit like that. And it's bullshit. He never said that. And the reporter who was working for this, and this shows to show how biased Fox is, because this was the reporter covering the Kerry campaign. He was writing this stuff down as a joke. He was hardly being fair and balanced. He wasn't being an objective reporter. He didn't like Kerry. And you know that bias is going to show up in his reporting. And it found its way onto the Fox News website. Now, while Fox apologized and made a retraction, do you hear any of the kind of talk that was going on about what happened on CBS? None of it. And I think part of it is because everybody fucking knows that Fox News is nothing more than Republican propaganda. That's all it is. It's all it ever has been. Fair and balanced, my ass. Let's take a little break here. We got some music from the Billionaires for Bush. Now we'll be back with the last segment. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Me and my boy Felonious Axe gonna take the lyre down to G-Dog's crib in Crawford. And Dickie and Cola gonna bring some freaks too. Gonna have a blast. billionaires are here, we're men of the hour. We're sitting pretty chilling in the hall of power. We're buying access, seeing progress, and making a mess of the political process.
Oh yes,
our cheese is buying us a whole lot of leverage. When we arrive, they serve us a nice cool beverage. We're the final word on the pending legislation. Please don't play your hate in all the regulating of all corporations and our industries. We're the foxes with the platinum set of hen house keys, buying billion-dollar favors for a couple of G's. We got money currency steady blowing in the breeze. We're just living our American dream. The CEOs are playing for the Bush-Cheney team. My president, he got you all scared. The billionaires are coming, so you better beware. Step out or stretch hummers and everybody stands. Parents, lock up your daughters, here comes the billionaire.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We're dining on pheasant, we're dining on grouse. Yeah, the billionaires are in the house. Cheney work for us as Halliburton chief exec. Each year we're cutting dick another $1 million check. These federal contracts just land in our lap. We keep getting away with all the craziest crap. We're ripping off the Pentagon for soldiers' meals. We brought Nigerian officials making energy deals. We overcharge America, sell Iraq, Kuwaiti oil. But this sticks up for us, he's very loyal. You wanna win the game, you gotta make the rules. We stole an election right in front of you fools. Justice Scalia, I know you got my back. Let's forget about Iraq and shoot birds that go quack. We bought a vice president who totally cares. Kids, get out the way. Here come the billionaires.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We'll smack you around like an abusive spouse. Yeah, the billionaires are in the house. We are the kings of Capitol Hill, so just chill. We had a hand in drafting the energy bill. Drug company pockets must be lined, so Medicare reform was made with us in mind. Colin Powell's son gave us the royal jewels when he relaxed on the media ownership rules. We say Bush is our president. You know we ain't kidding. He's taking our money and doing our bidding. Everybody bow to the king. When it's all over, we'll own everything. A terror alert system got you on your knees while we're picking your pockets and snatching your cheese. We got the USA by its curly short hair, so look out below. Here comes the billionaire.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We're sucking your blood like a bloated louse. Yeah, the billionaires are in the house. Enron is in the house.
In the White House.
Halliburton is in the house.
In the White House.
News Corp is in the house.
In the White House.
Bechtel is in the house.
In the White House.
Citigroup is in the house.
In the White House.
ExxonMobil is in the house.
In the White House.
Philip Morris is in the house.
In the White House.
Monsanto is in the house.
In the White House.
This administration's preoccupation is directing the nation on wealth consolidation. All those taxes that you pay, they'll be coming our way upon a platinum tray, so don't play. No one can stop us, no one dares. Run for the hills, here comes the billionaire. Run for the hills, here comes the billionaire. Here comes the billionaire.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms or euphemistic language. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. And it gets worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables. Shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time, and the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that. I'll bet you that.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup O' Joe radio show.
And we're back on the Cup O' Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Please email me and let me know what you think of the show, or if you have any suggestions, anything you want me to talk about. And please comment on the board. It always makes it better if the board is a little bit more interactive. We've got a very good group of people who post on the board. My old nemesis, B-Chan, and his Reaper pal, Ross, Tim, John from Pittsburgh, the other Tim, and my old friend, Admiral Howard, who was a guy I knew back when I was in the Air Force, though he was not in the service at the time. I used to hang out with him. I hope everybody is having a good evening. It is 11 p.m. on Sunday, and I'm hopeful to get this show done in time to get it on Rant Radio at midnight. And actually, since I didn't do the show on Thursday, I was apologizing to Smokehouse, who runs Rant Radio, for not having it ready, or for, you know, I didn't have it because I had the medical procedure. And I was apologizing to him for that. And he said, well, you know, we had kind of like live debate coverage anyway. So he said it didn't make that much of a difference. And that's cool. I like that. And next week, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m., I'm not sure exactly what time I'll be on at this point, but I will be on the News Maverick radio show. That's newsmaverick.us. Where was I? Well, last week we had Juan Cole, of course, last show, and he was a great guest to have. I didn't have any guests on this week, which is a shame because it makes it more difficult for me. But I want to go back to talking about the debate for a moment, not so much the debate but people's reaction, because everything I've read, and I saw enough of the debate. I didn't see the entire thing, but I saw enough of the debate to see that Kerry looked like a president and George Bush looked like the little boy that he is, a little boy doing a man's job and failing miserably at it. And it's just remarkable how easy it is to destroy a country's reputation and around the world, and just so easy, just so easy. And it must have pissed off Karl Rove, because in 90 minutes he got rid of so much of the image that they had worked so hard to set up for him as being this big manly man, and here we have this little boy who can barely answer questions. But I did want to talk about that because a lot of people seem to think that, well, Kerry won this debate, so therefore he's going to win this election easily, you know. And, you know, that's just horseshit. You know, that's just horseshit. And I've been getting into arguments with people, some of them my friends on the left, you know, talking about the election, and mainly the people in the Bart Cop chat room, and some of whom got on my case for saying I was quitting and giving up. You know, and naturally they want Kerry to win, and so do I. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm looking for us to lose or that I want us to lose, but some people are just a little too enthusiastic. You know, and some people are even saying that Kerry's going to win in a landslide, and that's just not going to fucking happen, people. You need to wake the hell up. Y'all need to wake the hell up. There is reality to be dealt with. And I use the example of Stalingrad and how the Nazis were fighting the Russians in the city of Stalingrad. And the generals kept telling that Hitler that he had to, you know, back off, regroup, and then reattack, because otherwise they would lose the city and then, you know, start losing back. And Hitler was like, no, you got to fight to the last man. Never surrender. Never give up. Never quit. And that's a bullshit attitude to have. It's going to take us a long time to build up the movement that we really need. Yes, getting Kerry in there would be nice, but let's face it. John Kerry is not going to solve this country's problems. FDR did not solve this country's problems by himself. He was at the forefront of a huge political movement, the biggest political movement in this country's history. A movement that was so powerful that it's taken 70 years for the people with the money to get their power back. And they're right there on top of it again, but it's taken them a long time. And it's going to go their way for quite some time longer, and we need to make that realization. We need to realize that. I don't think Kerry's going to win. I don't mean to say that I think he's a bad candidate or not a good, wouldn't make a good president. I don't even mean it to say that he's running a bad campaign, because I quite frankly think he's doing a damn good job. But the playing field is so tilted against him that it's going to take nothing short of a hand of God miracle for him to be able to pull this off. And even if he manages to do that, the question is, will he have a Democratic Congress to work with? Because without that, he's not going to be able to accomplish much of anything. And if you thought the Clinton years were bad as far as them attacking the president, you haven't seen anything yet. These people will have no scruples, and they will stoop to nothing to pull him down. And I know some of you on the left out there, the Bart Coppers and the other people, and by the way, I want to thank Bart Kopp for linking me over the weekend, too, which meant I got a couple of days out of it. But some of you people, especially the Bart Coppers, seem to think that I'm quitting. This is pure bullshit. I am recognizing the situation for what it is. If Kerry wins, is the so-called professional media suddenly going to stop whoring for their corporate interests and begin to actually do their jobs as news people? Get real. Are the Republicans just going to wither and die and go away? Get real. The Heritage Foundation will still be there. SCAFE will still be funding it and other groups. They're still going to be there. They're not going away. They're not going away. And even assuming if Kerry manages to get a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House behind him, will they give him the same kind of loyalty that the Republicans give Bush? I don't think so. The Democrats don't work that way. At least they don't now. They used to work that way. Now we're all kind of in these little splinter groups, and everybody has their own little pet causes, where they don't realize that their pet cause isn't always the most important thing on the issue. The guy I'm going to be being interviewed on the News Maverick show, he thinks the gay marriage thing is a big issue. I could care less about the fucking gay marriage issue. I could care less about the gay marriage issue. Granted, it's a good thing. I'm not saying I'm against it. But let's face it, that's not going to be a turning point. It's something the Republicans are doing because they know they're not going to be able to pass a lot of stuff. They know that they're not going to pass their hardcore agenda, because as soon as that shit happens, they don't have an issue anymore. And I'm like, look, forget about that shit. You know, the important things are the economy, the important things are how we're dealing with foreign affairs, and how we're going to move, as President Clinton says, from an interdependent community, global community, to one that's, what's the word he used? But basically one global community. Because we're moving in that direction. The rest of the world certainly is. And we could have been a leader in that. Or we could be dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century, which is what might happen. The draft is a big issue. It's much more important than gay marriage. And, you know, let me diverge a little bit here. The Republicans are using the gay marriage as the thing. Where was it, in South Carolina or North Carolina or someplace? They were sending out flyers to Republicans, and I guess to anybody, just a big mailing list, that said if the Democrats win, then the Bible will be banned and gay marriage will be permitted. Honey, let me ask you a question. You're a Christian, right? And you've seen some Democrats, and you know some of them don't take necessarily the same religious views that you do, right? Do you think that the Democrats want to ban the Bible? She's like, what? She's got an expression on her face like, what the hell are you talking about? But, you know, they've been passing out flyers, the Republicans have, saying that that's what the Democrats will do. Now, let me ask you a question. Carol, who's taking care of your kids right now, and Rita, your stepmother, would they believe that if they were told that? Yeah, she's shaking her head, probably. It's a cult. It's a cult, people. It's not a political party anymore. It's a personality cult. Bush is the savior. Bush has been sent by God, and the Democrats are all evil, anti-religious people who want to ban the Bible. It's horseshit. It's horseshit. And they live in their fantasy world. But you know what? Some of us live in a fantasy world of our own. Kerry gets elected, everything's going to turn around. It's going to be springtime. You know, on when I was on Laura Flanders' show, they asked a thing about Kerry's plan to raise the minimum wage to $7 an hour over 5 years. And I just laughed at that. What they ought to do is raise it to $15 an hour, raise it next week. You know, $7 an hour is bullshit. Can anybody survive on $7 an hour? Is the employment situation getting any better? You know, people give statistics. I don't give a damn about employment statistics. And you never hear me, almost never hear me talk about them on the show. Because they're bullshit. Statistics are important, and I agree. And there are things that you can learn from statistics if you're honestly looking at them to try to figure out shit that's happening. But you can use statistics. What is it they say? There's three things: lies, damn lies, and statistics. In baseball, you can prove that a third string player was better than Babe Ruth in certain instances. They knew this because when they were first in the originally doing arbitration, people were bringing up statistics that made people look like they were better than Babe Ruth so they can get more money. And it worked. But I don't talk about that here. The official unemployment rate is what, about 5.5%, 5.6? But that doesn't include the millions of people who are still working but only making less money than they were making before, working a crappier job than they were. It doesn't include the people who have completely given up work because, you know, they only account the people who are actively getting unemployment or applying for it. It doesn't include any of them. The real unemployment rate is probably much higher, maybe as much as 10, 11%, maybe in the double digits. I don't know for sure, but I do know this. Most of the people I know, the working people I know, and I talk to working people all the time. I talk to people when I go get some food. I talk to people in the supermarket. I talk to people at fast food places. I talk to people where I work. Almost nobody is happy. Even some of the people I know who are making good money are not particularly happy. My landlord, who is a nice guy, despite the fact that he is a Republican supporter, he watches Fox News too much, but hey, he's very lenient with us with the rent, and he is a nice guy. He's not particularly happy. He had lost his job, as a matter of fact, and he had a lot of trouble finding work. And he got a lot more skills than I do, a lot more managerial skills than I do. And he hadn't been able to find work. It's fucking tough out there, people. Does anybody get it? And that's the type of thing that I talk about. That's the thing that I mention on the show. How does this stuff affect us personally? How does it affect us personally? And here I have all these people sitting there going, oh, Kerry this, Kerry that, and Kerry's going to win. You know, look, I'd be very happy if Kerry wins. Don't get me wrong. But let's face it. It's not going to be fucking springtime for Democrats if he does win. Wake the hell up. There are still going to be very rich and powerful people who are going to try to do everything they can to make life more difficult for everybody else so they can get just a few more dollars. It's stupid and it's pointless and it's evil to a certain extent. But you know what? It's going to continue. And even if we do win with the kind of movement that we had in 1932, guess what? They'll be back. As powerful a political movement we had that won in 1932, which would put things into place that have lasted so long, it's still in danger. And it will always be in danger. And the reason why it's happening again, that these people are getting power again, is because we've forgotten. Was it Grover Norquist or somebody else who talked about how the demographics are changing? And the reason the demographics are changing is because the people who were who built up the New Deal are slowly but surely dying off. The older generation, they're slowly but surely dying off. And I guess to a certain extent they failed because they didn't pass on their values to the generation after them. A lot of what happened with American workers is that we got too much focused on the creature comforts and on keeping up with the Joneses. And we were very conformist as well. We have to understand that the battle is constant. Do you understand? It's constant. It never ends. There are always going to be people who want to cut the corners and who want more than their fair share of the wealth and the power, whether they've earned it or not. It doesn't matter to them. It's not important. It's all a big game. It's all a big competition. And they don't see the after effects of what they do because it really doesn't bother them. And we have a lot of people on the left who are not as affected by a situation as they need to be because they're doing good. They're making money. Al Franken's great, but you know what? When was the last time he had to worry about where his last meal was coming from? Has he ever had to worry about that? He's a great guy. I love him to death. He's funny. He's a lot funnier now than he was when he first started out on Saturday Night Live. I used to think he was just overblown a bit. But he's a lot funnier now. But you know what? He's never had to worry about, you know, whether he's going to live anywhere. James Carville tells a story about how he was down on his last legs. This is before he became part of the Clinton campaign. He had been doing some consultant work, but he called up somebody and he needed to borrow $5,000 to get back on his feet again. I don't know anybody I can borrow $5,000 from. Honey, do you know anybody we can borrow $5,000 from or give? You know, she said, I wish. You know, I knew people who had money and they didn't want to help me out. I'm not going to say who it is or who they were. But they could have helped out, and they didn't. There was a certain time in my life, 2 or 3 years ago, was it that long ago? No, not even quite that long ago, where $10,000 would have saved my life. And my wife wouldn't have had to give up her kids, and we wouldn't be in the situation we're at today. But you know what? That person didn't come through for me. And I know that if the situation were reversed, I would have done the same for that person. I would have helped them. And I wouldn't have even made it alone. I would have been a gift. Here you go. Take it. It's yours. How many people out there are in the same boat I am? We're riding without a safety net. We are riding without a safety net. And we better wake the fuck up and smell the coffee. Anyway, that's gonna do it for this show. I hope I get it finished in time. It's about 20 after 11 right now. I hope I get it finished in time. Until the next show, this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show. My blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. I'll see you on Thursday. Have a good one. Bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe radio show has been a production of Jove Enterprises Incorporated.